At noon on KSFR looks at the top local news headlines for this Tuesday, July 2nd. Governor Martinez has ordered flags across New Mexico flown at half-staff today through Friday in honor of the 19 members of Arizona's Granite Mountain Hotshots killed Sunday as they battled a wildfire north of Phoenix. That team had worked with the City of Santa Fe's fire department and had also been deployed to the Thompson Ridge Fire in the Jemez last month. Christa St. Vincent Regional Medical Center has filed a lawsuit against its emergency room doctors group. Today's New Mexican says it's an attempt to protect against future lawsuits leveled at the hospital's emergency services. Those services are contracted through an entity called HealthFront, which was formerly known as Northern New Mexico Emergency Medical Services. The suit has been filed in anticipation of a possible civil complaint of malpractice stemming from a 2010 emergency room visit by the wife of a former state attorney. Electric utility PNM has announced plans to increase the solar photovoltaic arrays it owns by 30% next year, as well as increasing the wind power on its system by 50% in 2015. Three new solar centers will likely be constructed near the greater Albuquerque metro area. The new solar projects will bring PNM to an output of 67 megawatts of power derived from the sun. When combined with wind output and a 10-megawatt geothermal facility coming online next year, PNM's green energy alternatives will be producing enough power for 132,000 homes. Members of the New Mexico Alliance for Retired Americans will gather at 2 p.m. in Albuquerque to create a human chain in front of the Social Security Administrative offices to protest the chained Consumer Price Index. Those cuts are estimated to cause annual benefits to be some $1,000 lower by the time a beneficiary reaches age 85. Critics say the cuts do not accurately account for large health care cost increases faced by seniors and people with disabilities. Today's Duke City rally mirrors similar events taking place in other states across the nation. New Mexico's agricultural workers labor in difficult, dangerous, and abusive working conditions, all while being paid devastatingly low wages. Those are the conclusions of a new report by the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty. They performed a study of New Mexican field and dairy workers, finding that they're often victims of wage theft such as minimum wage violations, illegal deductions, working off the clock, or not being paid at all. The center advocates that state laws be amended to include agricultural workers among those protected by labor laws. We'll be speaking with the center's legal director a bit later as At Noon continues. Roswell's Valley Meat Company just given the final federal green light to begin its controversial horse slaughterhouse operation may be facing yet another roadblock by opponents. A number of animal protection organizations and private individuals have filed suit against the USDA asking for an immediate injunction. They say the U.S. Department of Agriculture failed to conduct the necessary environmental review before authorizing the facility to begin operations. Valley Meat intends to process horses for exported foodstuffs. The nearby Heroso fire has had little or no new growth over the past 24 hours. Acreage involved is still pegged at 11,100 acres with no containment. The 10,000-acre Tres Lagunas fire near Pecos is 90% contained, and the Thompson Ridge fire in the Jemez is 100% contained. Officials are making public notice today, though, that if thunderstorms pop up as expected both today and tomorrow, there is a threat of flooding with fire debris flows in canyons and low-lying areas. The Santa Fe County DWI program has announced details of its holiday weekend's anti-drunk driving crackdown. Sobriety checkpoints will be operated throughout the weekend across the county with extra officers deployed. Additionally, anti-DWI radio ads will be aired, stressing consequences such as vehicle forfeiture and jail time. In another anti-DWI initiative, AAA New Mexico will be offering its Tipsy Toe service across 18 hours from 6 p.m. on Wednesday through midnight on Thursday, July 4th. Motorists, bartenders, restaurant managers, party hosts, or passengers of a drinking driver may call 1-800-AAA-HELP for a free tow home of up to 10 miles. National real estate data clearinghouse CoreLogic notes an uptick in Santa Fe home prices for May. They increased by some 14.6% compared to May of 2012. When excluding distress sales, the rate of increase is pegged at 8.1%. The May report also shows an increase of 1 percentage point from the April numbers. And weather for Santa Fe: partly sunny today through Thursday with a 40 to 50% chance for afternoon and evening thundershowers. Highs in the upper 70s and overnight lows in the upper 50s. Meanwhile, the current Santa Fe temperature now 71 degrees. At noon, we'll be back with today's feature stories in just a moment.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by PNM, offering a way to support renewable energy on your bill with PNM Sky Blue. PNM customers can choose to pay a little more to support wind and solar energy efforts and show their commitment to the environment. If you have a question for PNM, you can talk to them on Twitter or Facebook, or learn more about PNM Sky Blue at PNM.com.
12 minutes past the hour here at KSFR as At Noon continues with today's feature stories. A new report out from the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty says that some 20,000 agricultural and dairy workers in New Mexico face a host of deplorable work conditions, said to be among the worst in the nation. They fall outside the scope of worker protections usually addressed both at the federal and state levels, and thus face routine wage abuse and safety hazards. Joining us now to talk more about the report is Gail Evans, Legal Director for the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty. Gail, give us an overview of your findings.
Yeah, we have been working with New Mexico agricultural workers for the last 5 years on a campaign to win workers' compensation coverage for them in the state. And during that time, we learned that there are a lot of national statistics about farm and dairy workers, but there was very little local information. So we conducted a survey across the state of 250 New Mexico agricultural workers, and we worked with an expert on doing this sort of investigation to make sure that the survey results were valid. And basically, we found that New Mexico's agricultural workers are even worse off than agricultural workers are nationally.
And explain to us how this group of workers are not protected by existing labor laws.
Well, there are exemptions in federal labor laws for agricultural workers, and those are based on an agricultural industry from the past. Those laws were passed back in the 1930s when our agricultural industry was really comprised of many small farms. And those laws haven't been changed to keep up with what's happened in agricultural, which is now that it is agribusiness, it's large corporate industry. And that is true in New Mexico as well.
And in the absence of protection by federal law, are there any state laws to address these conditions?
We have passed good state laws to protect other workers, but the agricultural industry has managed to lobby itself out of these worker protection laws locally. So the dairy industry in our state does not have to pay its workers the state minimum wage. All agricultural workers in our state, meaning dairy and field workers, are excluded from all overtime protections under state law. And what's most striking about that is that in our state, we have the largest dairies in the country. Our dairy industry is very proud of being having the largest dairies in the country, and yet it doesn't have to pay the state minimum wage or overtime like every other industry in our state has to pay.
And just to be clear about the workers affected by this lack of regulation, are we talking about folks who are here without documentation and therefore must work under the radar, so to speak, or are these U.S. citizens?
We're talking about both United States citizens, legal immigrants, and workers who are here without papers. But the labor protection laws and workers' compensation coverage laws are very clear that they are intended to cover all workers, regardless of immigration status.
One of the major areas of abuse found in your report is wage theft. Would you talk about that, please?
Well, I'm going to tell you about a worker that I've worked with named Isabel, and she is a field worker. She picks chili in New Mexico. She is about 50 years old. She's a legal resident of the state. She's worked here for several decades, and it is not uncommon for her to be paid about $30 for a long day of work, even though the law states that she should be paid at least the minimum wage. So that's an example of a woman putting in 8 or 10 hours a day and being paid only about $3 or $4 an hour, meaning that her employer is stealing her wages that are owed to her. And we found that 67% of the agricultural workers had experienced that type of wage theft in the past year. The average household income for New Mexico's field workers is less than $9,000 a year, which is about half of what the average household income is for field workers nationally. So in large part, this is due to the fact that farm workers aren't even being paid the wages that they are owed.
Occupational safety hazards pose a problem too, yes?
Yes, I mean, the field workers are, nearly half of them reported that they have experienced pesticide-related illnesses in the past year. And then on the dairies, I mean, working in a dairy is extremely dangerous. You're working around large, dangerous animals, and more than half of the dairy workers reported being injured at work in the last year. And what's striking about this is that agricultural workers generally do not have health insurance. They're not provided it by their employer, and currently there's no public program that's going to cover the majority of these workers.
It would seem the remedies will have to come from a double-barreled approach both at the state and federal level. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, at the state level, what we need to do is amend our laws so that agricultural workers are covered by the same worker protections that our other workers are covered on. And at a federal level, yes, that would be great, but I think that, there's work that we could do locally to at least get our agricultural workers up to the same standards that they are in other states. So we need to amend the minimum wage law so that they apply to all agricultural workers. We need to ensure that agricultural workers are paid for overtime, since most of these workers, especially the dairy workers, are putting in 6 or 7 days a week and yet not paid overtime like all other workers. We need to make sure that agricultural workers are covered by workers' compensation so that if they're injured at work, they will have their medical benefits and lost wages paid like they're paid to all other workers in our state. And in the long run, it would be really nice to see agricultural workers be able to organize and be covered by the labor relations laws like all other workers are.
As you move toward next year's session of lawmakers, any groups or sympathetic ears among our state's lawmakers to this issue?
We have actually had a lot of sympathetic ears from leadership, Democratic leadership in the legislature. But we have a lot of work to do because the agricultural lobby in our state is very strong. So we have a lot of work to do to bring around and educate policymakers in our state about just how horrendous the working conditions are for agricultural workers in New Mexico.
Gail Evans, Legal Director for the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty, many thanks for speaking with us here at noon on KSFR.
Ebullient mezzo-soprano Susan Graham performs a title role of Jacques Offenbach's riotously funny The Grand Duchess of Gerolstein this summer at the Santa Fe Opera. All's fair in love and war games at the Gerolstein Military Academy, with its dashing uniformed cadets and apple-cheeked local sweethearts cheering them on, with the Academy's patroness, the Grand Duchess herself, in sexy pursuit. Far from being a lady of a certain age, this Grand Duchess is an amorous aristocrat with an eye for Fritz, her favorite young cadet, sung by the dynamic American tenor Paul Appleby. Soprano Anya Matanovic completes the love triangle. Emmanuel Villaume conducts. The Santa Fe Opera's Grand Duchess of Gerolstein promises lots of laughter and fun. Learn more about this production and the entire upcoming season by visiting santafeopera.com. or by calling 800-280-4654. That's 800-280-4654. This message is sponsored by the Santa Fe Opera, a tax-exempt organization.
12:22 in the KSFR newsroom, and temperature in Santa Fe at this hour is 73 degrees on its way to a high in the upper 70s. At Noon continues now. The U.S. representative from New Mexico's 1st District is Michelle Lujan Grisham. She recently introduced a major campaign finance reform bill and joins us now to speak about that and other issues. Congresswoman, tell us about this reform bill.
We introduced a bill. It's H.R. 2520, and it is the Social Welfare Organizations Reform Act, or 501c4. And what it does is it prevents tax-exempt social welfare organizations from engaging in political activity, which they have been doing for a couple of decades. These were created like 501c3s. These nonprofit exempt organizations were intended to do educational, social welfare, and charitable work. That's why they're tax-exempt. They're serving a social special interest, and for that work, then can be tax-exempt. This particular organization, the social welfare organization, started to be able to use 49%, so nearly half of the money that they raise, without disclosing their donors, they could engage in direct political activity. And while I don't have the exact amount, it is a sizable amount of money that leads to specific and direct political work, and it's tax exempt, and it's dark money. You have no idea who's funding those political activities.
What kind of support are you getting on this issue from other congressional members?
You know, it's got the ranking member as a co-sponsor and another freshman president, Matt Cartwright. We've just introduced it. I expect that we'll get many Republican co-sponsors. This is an issue that gets right to the recent investigation into the IRS's targeting, where they were looking at these organizations and trying to figure out, were they using 49% or more? There's a lot of political activity going on. There were allegations that they were targeting just conservative groups. Now we know that they were looking at liberal groups. And the reality is, the IRS should not be doing any targeting. Two, they don't know how to test because they really haven't been able to control this 49% threshold. And they were never intended. The law says that you can be tax-exempt only if you're doing it exclusively for the purpose of that charitable or social welfare, something for veterans, early childhood education, environmental support and education. And that's not what's going on. It seems to me, and I think Congress will agree, the easiest way to deal with this problem is to go back to the requirement, single purpose, and secondly, it's a step towards campaign finance reform. I think it's a really important first step. We're going to hold these organizations accountable. We're going to solve the problems the IRS is currently having, and we're going to hold them accountable. And I think that that's what folks want to see, that we're doing the right work, that we're holding folks accountable, and we're making government serve its intended purpose.
And moving on to another subject, you recently tried to live on the amount allowed for recipients of the SNAP or food stamp program. Tell us, how did that go?
I did. I joined more than 28 of my colleagues in Congress, and we lived on a week on just the funds that an individual on food stamps, or now it's called SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, what an individual would live on, and it's just about $4.50 a day. It was really tough, and I tried to shop. It took me more than like an hour and a half to shop with just that little bit of money, just over $31, because you're trying to figure out how that food's going to last for a week. I had in my mind that if I was really trying to provide staples for a family, what would I be doing? So I ate beans, rice, top ramen. I had two or three apples, two or three bananas. I couldn't afford a single fresh vegetable. I wasn't able to afford nutritious bread. And then I got a jar of peanut butter. And it was really tough. And the most startling thing is that I was hungry.
It sounds like an almost impossible task to eat a healthy diet on the limited funds.
You can't. And even if you can get enough rice and beans and pasta, the reality is it's all carbs. There's no protein. You are unable to have any kind of sound nutrition guidelines. And we're talking about cutting $20.5 billion out of that program. We have 442,000 New Mexicans, half of which are children, on that program. And if they're off the food stamp program, they're also not eligible then for free and reduced free lunches, which means these kids will get a meal a day at home. They don't eat at school. Last week, the national survey and resource folks said that New Mexico is now number one in the country for the worst place to raise a child. One in three children here are chronically hungry, and these are children then who have no chance at learning, no chance at real health success and productive outcomes, and it's time that we do something immediately about that. So I did the challenge to raise awareness to this important issue, and that taking food away from hungry children isn't the way that we address their problems.
Do you think there'll be some governmental intervention on this issue?
I absolutely do. Now, the Farm Bill, which contains the program for food stamps or SNAP, failed the House specifically because the cuts to the nutrition program were too harsh. There's a Senate version that has a much smaller cut, and that bill will make its way to the House. And we really do want to get a Farm Bill out of Congress. So we're going to work really hard to make sure that there are minimal cuts or no cuts, and then work with states to bolster these programs. And now I need a partnership with local lawmakers, and I hope Governor Martinez to make sure that we focus on this very significant, dire. I mean, the reality is it really is life and death for these kids and families. We have to provide a safety net. You have to have sufficient food to support these young children and their parents. And this is a program, by and large, that's the most cost-effective. It's the leanest administratively of any government social safety net program. And most people are only on it for an average of about 12 months to 18 months. I mean, as soon as they get a job and lift themselves up a little bit, they get off the program.
And anything else you'd like to add?
It's a tough climate, but I'm optimistic that Congress is beginning to tackle the really difficult problems this country faces and to do it in a way that's meaningful and bipartisan, common sense, and practical. And I'm really proud to be part of that.
U.S. Representative Michelle Lujan Grisham of New Mexico, many thanks for speaking with us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
Here and Now is moving to NPR, and KSFR will no longer be able to carry the show. That decision was not ours. We're launching a rotation of weekly shows in the 4 p.m. hour, such as Moyers & Company on Mondays and Alternative Radio on Tuesdays. Living on the Edge will move to 4 o'clock for a full hour on Thursdays. For the full rundown, visit our website. In the weeks ahead, we'll also be adding some new local shows to our schedule. We hope you'll tune in and give us your feedback. We expect the schedule to evolve over the next few months, and we really want to hear from you.
A recent release from the Poison Control Center here in New Mexico says young people are increasingly using alcohol, not by drinking it, but by inhaling it. Here is KSFR news reporter Charles Maynard filing his story.
The problem of underage drinking in New Mexico is longstanding. Now, the Poison Control Center has sent out word that there's a new way of consuming alcohol that has dangerous potential. Shelley Manlev is a chairperson of the Santa Fe Drinking Prevention Alliance.
I've heard before because I have seen the same press release put out by the Partnership for a Drug-Free America. So I have not heard about it through any kind of direct experience here in Santa Fe or in New Mexico. I think that's an important distinction. Unfortunately, people are endlessly creative. There are some college students, particularly those who like to film themselves doing crazy things, which YouTube is full of, who have experimented with this, and there are products that do exist that allow people to inhale. They vaporized alcohol. However, it does not appear to be something that has taken the country by storm or that, you know, our youth are necessarily participating in.
There are a number of concerns about the inhalation method.
There are great concerns by medical folks that if people were to inhale alcohol instead of drinking it, that basically what they're doing is they're inhaling a toxin. Drinking it, you're inhaling a toxin as well. Alcohol has a toxic, a poisonous effect on the body. We know it has other effects too, but when you, if you were to inhale something, and this is true of any drug, that digesting is one of the slower ways of taking in a drug, and inhaling it, it's partly what happens with nicotine and tobacco or other kinds of drugs that are smoked. Inhaling it is a faster way to get a drug into your bloodstream. So if you can imagine inhaling alcohol, it goes directly into the lungs and into the brain immediately instead of having to go through your stomach and your small intestine and get absorbed into the bloodstream. And when you digest alcohol, if you've eaten, there's that effect of slowing things down because of food you've taken in. Or even if you haven't eaten, it still has to, you know, about 20% of the alcohol is absorbed in your stomach. So there would be significant concerns about alcohol going immediately through the lungs into the brain, and the risk of alcohol poisoning would be substantially more. People die of alcohol poisoning.
Given that the number of users at this time appears to be quite low, the question arises how to broach the subject with teens and children without supplying a how-to lesson in alcohol inhalation.
First of all, we don't have any statistical evidence. I think it's important to note that we don't have any. We don't have any documented surveys or, you know, even the only evidence is from YouTube. I don't know how much of the products that do this are being sold, but it is clearly a small group of college students in a prank kind of way, or maybe there's a bar here or a bar there, but this is not something that is occurring in any great numbers anywhere in New Mexico. It doesn't mean that we don't want to be aware, and the truth is we always want parents to be aware. We want parents to be aware if they see strange things in their kids. If they hear their kids laughing and talking and doing a YouTube, hopefully they can see what their kids are putting up on YouTube and are aware of what their young people are doing. The reports in the press release talk about college students. So what I don't want parents to do, and I think it's a significant concern, is teach their children how to do crazy things with drugs. Their kids already know enough about how to do crazy things with alcohol and other drugs. And my sense is this is a reminder to parents about how dangerous alcohol is for young people, that alcohol, however it's taken in, particularly binge drinking, and in the case of this inhaling, you're going to be taking in alcohol in the doses of at least of binge drinking, you know, which is 4 or 5 drinks in a 2-hour period. And we already have about 1/4 of our high school students who binge drink and about 1/10 of our middle school students who binge drink. And using alcohol at those young ages, especially in that kind of toxic quantity, is dangerous. So to me, parents should be reminded that alcohol and being under 21 shouldn't mix, that it is toxic to the brain, toxic to the body, impairs education and learning, and to remind them of the importance of talking to their kids about all alcohol in all forms and the effects of alcohol and how important it is to them that their kids stay away from it, that they do not want their children using alcohol before they're 21 while they still have very much growing brains and growing minds and have enough challenges.
Shelley Manlev of the Santa Fe Prevention Alliance.
Be safe. We're approaching 4th of July. Believe it or not, it used to be New Year's Eve was the time for people to be drink and drive. And then it was Halloween, and 4th of July is actually a time in which people mix alcohol and driving. And I'm sure some of our young people have parties, Thursday night party this time. You know, it's summertime, so please talk to your kids about being safe, making good choices, and talk to them about how, not just that they, you want them to protect themselves, but how they can protect themselves.
For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
35 minutes past the hour here at KSFR. Time for At Noon now to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
I'd just been to the store owned by the son of Albert on the south side of St. Francis. I got into my car and headed toward the parking lot exit. Then I saw him, a panhandler by the stop sign. I briefly debated whether to avoid him or forge ahead. I forged ahead, reaching for the inevitable dollar that I was going to give the panhandler. As I approached him, I was a little taken aback by his appearance. A robust, healthy-looking 30-something wearing clean clothes and appearing as if he had just stepped out of the pages of GQ magazine. Gangbanger Quarterly. I almost didn't give him the dollar. Then I thought, you know, times have probably been tough for gangbangers, too. People not being able to afford the illegal drugs, home invasions, and burglaries down ad infinitum. So I gave the panhandler a dollar. I certainly didn't want to give the gangsta a bad rap.
I gave the gangster a dollar because I didn't want him to make me holla. That's all I could give him, a dollar. Maybe I'll see him tomorrow.
For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with thanks to my contributing colleague today, Charles Maynard. We'll be back with more news of and for New Mexico for you tomorrow, and as always, we hope you join us.